All right, we'll see where this thing fucking goes. Thanks for coming. Hey, everybody, welcome to episode number 123 of From the Jingweeds. I am joined today with one of the lunch partners. We tried to get the new Fire Rock lunch partner today to come over here. We didn't do the lunch thing, but we're going to get him over here. I guess we'll save that to maybe next time to get him on here. And maybe by then Dan will be back too. So we might kill two birds with one stone, if you catch what I'm saying. But I'll let him tell the whole story when he gets here. But right now we got Jonathan Williams joining again. He's Eagle Mountain superintendent, also one of the regional agronomists for Troon Golf here in Arizona. Jonathan, once again, thanks for coming over in a fill-in spot. It really wasn't supposed to be a fill-in spot. It's the other one bailed on us.
Yeah, no, it's okay. Filling in for Dan what I do.
Filling his shoes.
Big shoes to fill.
It is big shoes. Big tall shoes.
I have referenced that multiple times this week for some unknown reason that somebody's got big shoes to fill.
Mm-hmm. And Dan's like a size 13 or 14. Tall kid. Big shoes.
Yeah, back in the day, I remember listening to the podcast, and you guys were talking about how you guys were going to leg wrestle each other. Did you guys ever do that?
No, we never did that. Dan would destroy me. Dan does CrossFit, okay? Dan does CrossFit, and he'll tell you that. You know how CrossFitters are always telling everybody how they do CrossFit? Dan's one of those guys. He likes to throw it in there every so often.
I'm a great listener of the show. I'm not going to say that I've listened to all 123 episodes, but at one point in time, I did scroll to see if you guys had indeed leg wrestled.
No, we were going to do it on, I think, our 1,000th download, and we're at like 58,000 now.
Yeah.
So it's not so bad. It's way more than I ever thought people would fucking listen to me talk about whatever. But it's, you know, as we keep going further and further in this, we talk about the same thing at nauseam, you know, like, oh, the weather. Here, let's pull out the weather. The weather in Arizona right now, for anybody that really cares to listen, is fucking awesome. Okay, there's no more bitching about the snow. There's no more bitching about the rain. This, right now, what's going on today is pretty much what we live out here for, is this 70 to 80 degree breezy. Sit in the sun, it'll get warm. You'll definitely get burnt, but you're not going to, you know, you're not going to die. It's good beer drinking weather.
10 months out of the year, Arizona is a fabulous place to live. Yeah. And if you happen to have some of the mountain homes here, it's all you can capitalize on all 12 months.
It's unreal. And I mean, the mountain homes this year, they pretty much going to break the record for the most snow they've ever had in Flagstaff. It's like number 5 or so years for the Sholo Pine Top area or something like that. And who knows, they might get a little bit more. It's not supposed to. Next week, there's a little bit of a storm coming through. Maybe on top of the mountain, it'll get more. But as far as in the city, I think they've had 12 feet total, which is nothing compared to like the Tahoe and shit like that. But that's a lot of fucking snow for here. Sedona had a foot for a storm. I don't think they've ever had a foot on record in one storm.
Yeah, I saw some images from the Culligard Classic, and you know, they're at Omni Tucson National. They got some more than just a dusting.
Oh yeah,
and you know, Tucson is kind of it's been common to get snow during the tournaments that they had there back in the day when they had golf tournaments at Dove Mountain. There was a couple years that they got snow and had to postpone. Yep. Like, luckily, they were match play rounds. But it's amazing that Tucson tournament golf is synonymous with these winter storms.
I know,
that
bring. Because Liv is going there next week. Liv will be out there next week, and the gallery got probably 4 to 6 inches.
Yeah,
just last week.
Yeah, and so they've all, it seems like historically they time those Arizona tournaments in like Valentine's Day ish region. Yep. and that's when we're getting our late winter storms. Excited to see the gallery on TV or on the CW. But a great facility, and you know, Mark Soto, who's there, used to work for us. So yep. you know, throw some support his way. And
I know Chris has been down there. Chris came down from Montana to go help him out, his brother Chris.
Yeah.
Chris is, he was at Tonto Verde here for a while. Shoot, he's been around.
Yeah,
a
worked for us at El Conquistador and then up in Montana for us as well. Yeah. Ah. So, but reuniting the brothers down there and.
And gets, I'm sure Chris was like, I'm out of this snow, right? I'm leaving the snow and now I'm going to go, okay, play in the snow. But it is definitely totally different. When you see it out here, it's just wild. Seeing the desert, you know, covered in it, you know, with the saguaros all over it. And, I mean, to see it dusting, yeah, whatever. But there was substantial amounts. Even Desert Mountain at 3,500, 3,600 feet had 6-8 inches on some of their courses. The desert where I take the dog hiking, I was kind of, I was out there last Saturday, so all the snow had melted. But just seeing how green that desert is and how much growth is going on out there, and then you put a couple, you know, an inch or two of snow on it, which then, I mean, in a sense is the old man's foliar feed, you know, a little bit. So, I mean, it was just so vibrant and crazy. And then you see the, you know, the out-of-towners out there hiking as well, and they're just fucking amazed at what it looks like. And we'll say, because we're going to watch it this summer, if it's not wet, just light the fucking match now and control it, right? Just light it now. Because some asshole is going to go up the 87 with his chains dragging from pulling his boat up to one of the lakes, one spark at 115, and goodbye to the entire desert.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's great that all of our reservoirs are filling back up here in the lower portion of the state. And, you know, with Colorado, western Colorado, receiving just a ton of snowfall.
Right.
That, you know, hopefully they're able to kind of suppress the damage that has been imposed on Lake Mead.
Right, yeah.
So it's all good.
What do they say? It would be 10 years of exactly what we had to get it back to, I guess, the top of the water line in that place.
And, you know, I'm sure, like, the general managers are not appreciative of the revenue shortfalls because of the different rains that we've gotten so far this season. But it is good for the industry as a whole.
Absolutely. We look at it here. You know, everybody's talking about how the golf course is in such great shape. And, you know, it is what it is. It's gotten better, you know. Basically, I look at that as there's 10 years of major work that has gotten us to here. But, man, we haven't really lost much revenue because, you know, the increase that we're out there getting a money grab and, you know, we're screwing people out of all this is bullshit, because every one of our inputs cost that much more. So it's not a money grab. But what's nice is we are holding steady on the money end, but we're doing less rounds. Yep. So to us as the, you know, turf managers, that's a win-win. You know, if you can get, if I could live on a golf course or work at a golf course that was steady 180 golfers at a premium price is like the most perfect window to sit in, rather than drop the price a hair, get it up to 220 golfers, a slow round of golf, the golfer is pissed, and then the damage of that many more golf carts and players out there, you know, gets to almost like this tipping point where it's, there's no coming back until you shut her down. With all these rains and stuff, we've been able to go car path only so much, and it shows. You know, none of the golfers that have to walk, God forbid, you know, you overweight, arthritic, because you haven't walked a fucking day in your life, now have to go and walk. It's like, people, you can use a little stroll around town, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah, I saw an article, maybe you would probably know, Golf.com or Golf Digest had top 10 greens fee costs during Super Bowl week. Where did Desert Canyon fit on that list?
Number 9, only number 10 was more expensive than number 9, which was, you guys at Golf.com, check your editors are crushing it over there. But yeah, which was funny is where they came up with those numbers, it was based on Golf Now's numbers. I think it said at the top it was like based on what Golf Now. We have two tee times a day that go through Golf Now, and that's exactly what we do, is we put it through the roof because we don't want the hot deal people. You know, the $11 round in the middle of January is ridiculous, you know, and they're always the ones that leave the worst reviews. But I thought it was very funny how they got those numbers, but I was like, holy shit, we're on that list? You know, with the Quinteros and the mm-hmm. Greyhawk.
Yeah, Greyhawk wasn't on the list, interestingly enough, which is also an oversight by some editors.
But right.
Yeah. You can only search one Golf Now site, I guess, and figure out what rates are in the Scottsdale area for a comprehensive study.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
But yes, True North being number one on the list. Quintero, someone there. Whirlwind as well. Eagle Mountain, not on the list.
Not on the list. And you're more expensive than we are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, luckily we're not on the list, but we fell in that zone, you know. But by far and large, you know, I wouldn't necessarily put us in top 10 of tee times for the Valley, but, you know, didn't receive any shrapnel, so we're good.
That's what you're looking for, right? Who cares? As long as there's no fucking arrows chucked at you. I mean, there's going to be people. I had run into, it's so funny how this works. So we played Rio Verde last Friday.
Okay.
Me, Dan, and his assistant ended up having to go to a meeting, but No Shoes Kenny was in town, so we were out there playing. And we go out as a foursome, and then the next group behind us members is a twosome, and they're flying, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we let them pass, and, you know, as we're about to let them pass, we hit into number four's par three, and then we wave them up. And I drove by the guy. I said, hey, as soon as we're already hit up there, I said, you guys hit up, pass us. Oh, yeah, no problem. So I wheel up there, and I say to Dan, I'm like, hey, just told the guy, you know, to hit up here. And he's like, yeah, what was his response? I was like, he seemed to be okay. He's like, that guy's not the best guy, right? It's like, all right, whatever. Proceeds to hit the ball. We don't know how this didn't go in for an ace. No idea. And he came walking up, big smile on his face, you know, the whole deal. Never putted the ball in, which I thought was weird. Walked right up to it and just picked it up and was super pumped. I think if I put it literally a half a revolution and that thing was going in the hole.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I would have, out of, hey, I hit a good shot, I would continue to put that thing at the bottom. Nope, just walked up there, no putter, just scooped it up. But he was, you boys have a great day today, you know, and just goes on and on about how wonderful the world is. And I mm-hmm. just turned to Dan. I said, isn't that fucking amazing?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that he hits one good golf shot today. I said, and here he is. He's the nicest guy in the world. But Dan had said he's not really the best to be dealing with. Three holes later, a neighbor says, hey, Dan, just to let you know, I took photos of that last guy. He was driving through. It's car path only today. He goes, those are his ruts, big. Same guy that was super pumped. Must have hit a bad tee shot three holes later. And now he's just going to buzz around and do what he wants.
I've played with, I'm not going to drop names of who I've played with from the industry, but golf is so fickle sometimes that the same person has been like, I love golf, golf's amazing, and then the next second he hits a horrible shot and he's like, I don't even know why I did a career in this. This is ridiculous, like total, just one end of the spectrum to the other, you know? I've always been an even keel golfer, which is, it's limited my potential because I don't get fired up enough to really press myself.
Right.
And then, but I do, you know, slough off bad shots really quickly, you know?
Yeah.
And so the struggle is just keeping focused enough to actually play as good as
right.
I can. That's the struggle that I got.
I guess I would say that I've definitely toned it way down. Like, I laugh more at shit. You know, yes, it's frustrating. Yes, I'll drop a monster F every so often. But it's I've definitely more or less take the comedy into it. Like, we play at the men's club. And so this past weekend, it was my group. Matty Rush was in it. Little Chucky was in it. And then Greg, that I talk about a lot, Jordan's buddy, that had kind of come into this. And now he's friends with all of us. But... and then the group in front of us was Casey Ruddick and a couple of the other guys that play in it. And two of them, not in the industry, one of our buddy Walt and his father-in-law are known to chuck their clubs quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And neither of them are any good at golf. But they just, with Walt, the wires just they cross a bit and off go clubs. So they tee off, and I turned to the guys in my group. I said, hey, the over-under set right now at 8 clubs being chucked today by those two, who, you know, combine, who wants in? So we laugh about it, whatever. 11th hole, we meet up on the tee box. Hey, Wall, how many clubs have you thrown? He's like, I only threw one today. I turn and I'm like, Greg, who never throws clubs, I'm like, he's at 7 right now by himself. And he's a good golfer. But that day, he just started. And like you said, you get too worked up. He's now throwing clubs, you know, squaring. There's no way he's getting it back. At this point, he's so gone. He wants off that golf course mm-hmm. so bad that no matter what he does is not changing anything. Today, I play with Javier, my assistant. We just threw clubs into the cart and we go buzzing out there. First hole, awful. Second hole, eh. Third hole, awful. Fourth hole, awful. Sixth hole, I finally said to him, I said, I have not hit a second shot other than on the par three, my second shot out of the turf. I'm in the desert the whole time. Front nine finally finishes, and as Dan says, get him to the back nine. Now we're playing. And then I get the phone call on 14. Hey, don't forget the 9 o'clock meeting. And it's 8:59. I'm like, fuck, I totally forgot. that's how the game is. Like, the entire front nine was a waste of, other than me fixing 10,000 ball marks from days before, like, it kind of turned into that. And that's what we're doing out there. We're working. It's nice. I encourage anybody that can is to pick a day, go with your assistant or go with your irrigator or go with anybody on the crew that has eyeballs and is actually going to help out rather than mowing a straight line or whatever. I'm talking to your irrigator, your assistant, is go out and play 6 holes. You know, go play random 6 holes. Go play, if you can, 14 or 18. But we both ride in our work vehicles. We have all the tools we need to do. And if we see stuff, we kind of go over stuff. We talk about what we're going to do next, you know, and you're right there rather than sitting in the office talking about, hey, you know that tree over there? I think it's on the corner of, the left side of 11, and there's a branch. You mean the first tree or the second tree? Well, when you're out there, you just go, that one. Cut that fucking thing down, you know? So I encourage to get out there and play, and I think it also will help, at least as the golfer end, it really gets you away from that major competition end of it. Mm-hmm. So you seem to play at a more even keel level because you're not out there solely to play. You actually have a whole nother more important job. It's just kind of golf is as we get around. This is how we're going to get around the golf course today.
Yeah, my struggle is I'll hit into the green. I'll have like a 12 foot or something like that. And as I walk up to the green, I'm, you know, just taking in everything at the golf course. And I'll see something that superintendent does that's really unique. And I'll be like, hey, look at that. You know, oh, that's something that I should take and make kind of a best practice, something like
right.
that. And I'll get so focused on that. And then by the time that, you know, the three other people have putted and they're like, John, it's your turn. And then I walk up there, just kind of line up, you know, there's no reading of the 12 foot putt.
No.
Goes by about 6 feet, you know, and I'm
scoop
like, all
it
right,
and you're off to the next.
Yep. Good.
That's
good,
probably good. The downfall of not paying for golf.
Yeah.
You know, I was number 4 here. I'm out in the desert and I'm going to take a line to actually go at the pin rather than punch it back out. It's the stupidest thing in the world, and there happened to be one of our neighbors. She was walking her dog, so we're waiting on her, and Javier's watching me and he can't see her. I was like, oh, I'm waiting for the neighbor. I'm like, I am taking this line that is absurd at this point. But and I ended up yelling to him. I was like, if I was paying for this, there's no fucking way I'd attempt to do what I'm about to do.
Well, it's kind of interesting because, you know, I noticed that last time I played at Wickenburg, you know, Ed Shimkus calls me 4 or 5 days later, and he's like, hey, give it to me, honest feedback. And so, you know, I provide him with a significant amount of positive reinforcement because the golf course is always so good.
Right.
And then just a couple little things that I saw that he also sees, you know.
Yeah.
And
you're almost pointing out, or how I look at it sometimes is I'm trying to point out the things that you know that you see, but I'm going to give you the priority as to what I, or help you prioritize that. See what the other guy sees. And then you're like, okay, you guys notice that too? That kind of climbs the list.
And, you know, so me and him talk for 25, 30 minutes. And then I hang up the phone and I go, what did I get on that hole? And I can't even remember my golf round, you know? It's like priorities change, you know? Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that property is just so beautiful.
It's so cool. And every time I play it now, since I learned, I guess, that is the first property that those two designed.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I don't know, there's something about, boy, did they nail it. And I think I've asked Peter this before. I don't think they've done any others. But, man, it's going to be a tough to follow that. Because did you think they get really lucky on making it that good? Or was it they really tried to make it that good?
It's a good experience, and I think it's a good experience for a lot of different types of golfers that I visit a ton of golf courses, mm-hmm. right? And so I've got some golf courses that are amazing championship golf courses, and then, you know, if you talk with a senior or a lady, then they're like,
or just a crazy, new golfer in general, critical. Like, no.
Yeah, this place is lousy. The bunkers are in the wrong place. Have you seen how deep the bunkers are? And Wickenburg is one of those places that some of the greens undulations on a couple holes are pretty aggressive. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't necessarily call them gimmicky. I think that if the pins are in the right spot.
I was going to say it suits kind of the purpose of where you got to place the pin.
Right.
You know.
It's
almost made to be directly in the middle of that flat shelf. You start moving it away from that spot, and then, yes, they start to get, they seem gimmicky.
Yeah,
but when you look at it as like, hey, on a Sunday pin, that thing in the middle of that shelf, you know, if you don't hit it on that shelf, it's fucking impossible to get to from anywhere. You know, those are the types of things. But you throw an average golfer on it. Wickenburg, I think, fits the average golfer, though. Very good. It's almost resorty.
Well, the last time I played there, you know, there was a hole on the back, I don't know, 15, 14. I get up, get ready to putt the ball, and I'm like, Ed must have stood here with a cup cutter this morning. This is where I want you to cut the pin.
Yeah.
Right here. And because... There was a few of them out there that were special pins.
Some special ones, yeah. Well, they, you know, sometimes during those Hack Attack events or any of our events that we do, you have to almost do it just to challenge, because there's such a wide range of golfer in the group or in within these organizations. You know, you got your absolute sticks down to people that basically play, the only time they play is at these events, mm-hmm. maybe, you know, so it's 10 times a year at the absolute most. And it's almost, you got to stick those things and hope the shittier golfer gets lucky, whereas it actually challenges the person thinking about it to make it fair.
Yeah. I mean, I've been lucky because I feel like I'm on both ends of the spectrum now, because back in the day, it was like, I'm showing up and I'm leaving with money because I was playing enough. And and now it's, I'm showing up, I'm having a good time. And if I sniff something, then like,
awesome,
I'm
right.
blessed. Yeah.
Awesome.
And, you know, Ed'll still be... you know, trying to kick me back tee boxes and stuff like that. And I'm like, over the past 5 years, right? Like I haven't golfed at Eagle Mountain, which is shameful. Right?
Yeah.
So been there over a year trying to be a good custodian.
That's another thing that blows my mind is you've been there over a year at this point.
Yeah.
It feels like yesterday.
Yeah.
Not yesterday, but it feels like, I don't know, overseed.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've been there a year. Still, I have, to this date, haven't putted one ball on one hole, haven't chipped, haven't nothing. I've gone to the driving range there, but I have not, not played any golf there. And when I was at Whirlwind, it was the same thing, is that I played in the employee, like, club championship.
Right.
Beat one guy in the first round, played the second round, and we played one golf course on the first round.
Yeah.
The second round, we played the other golf course, and the guy said, he comments, he goes, man, you did not know the yardage. And I'm like, Well, this is the first time that I've played out here. He's like, you worked here for 3 years at that point in time. Yeah. And I said, well, I had priorities, you know. Yeah. And it's so difficult sometimes, and kind of shameful on my part, is that when you're trying to make such a dramatic improvement at the club, when you're spending your time at the club and then you go out and you see something, then if I was seeing something that I was like parking my cart, driving back to the shop, driving my work cart back out, and then fixing that problem because I felt like, oh, this is the obligation that I have here, you know? And, you know, it wasn't right and it wasn't wrong, right? Like on both,
absolutely. And that's why, like, kind of like what we do today, and we've done, I keep saying we're going to do it more and more. And I think this is the second or third time, but both times we've done it, it's been so useful, you know, and so helpful to us to see certain things and see how things play, you know. So now we can go and make those changes. Yeah, I wanted to stop a handful of times and fix up, but it's like, it's not that isn't my priority. It was also, hey, we've got kind of a goal here, is to get around, look at certain things, but we're not going out there to fix it. Summertime, when we did it in the summer, that's when adjusting heads, you know, we're out there on a hole for 25, 30 minutes. Of course, we don't have golfers coming down our throat either. And if we did in the summer, you're just like, hey, pass by us, you know, no big deal. But, you know, that's when it seems more work. Right now, we're in quasi cruise control as far as, you know, us. We get up, we get out there, the crew mow it and get the fuck out of the way, because here come 220 of them. And on a Friday, we ain't getting shit done. So we said, fuck it, let's go play golf.
Back probably 10 years ago, we had a different social media manager at Troon. And, you know, as Troon was kind of expanding, you know.
It was social media 10 years ago. Oh, yeah, by the way, too. And I absolutely nuked social media last time. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck what you got to say. Listen, I know that I'm doing a fucking podcast while I, you know, and get to say what the fuck. I understand them on that same side that I'm bitching at. But I guess I have an hour to tell you about it, not 140 characters of my world-changing advice. I'll get into it, too. Yeah. But I thought it was funny, because at the end of that, I was editing it all, and I'm listening to myself, and I'm like, asshole, you do this, like, for a long period of time. Just continue to bitch about things. So here I am, calling myself out. No one called me for that. I called myself out.
So this social media guy reaches out to me. He goes, hey, you know, we're trying to make our blog more elaborate, right? And so they're talking about random pro shop stuff, random whatever, and it's like, oh, let's sprinkle in some golf maintenance stuff. And nobody wants to write for this blog. We got so many superintendents. It's like nobody like is going out of their way to write these fancy blogs about overseeding or all this. They're going to do it for their member newsletter, right? They might do it if one of the golf magazines reaches out to them and says, hey, can you help us with the story that we're going? But nobody's like, it's rare for somebody to be doing kind of this blog stuff, right? And so it's like, well, John, if we reach out to John, he won't tell us no, you know? And so I wrote one.
I can see this.
One about overseeding, about a couple different stuff. And then they're like, hey, just freelance one. And you know. And so I wrote about whether or not golf course superintendents should get like a reprieve in conditioning if they're golfers or if they're not golfers. Because I had, at that point in time, I had just recently played a golf course, and I could tell that guy didn't golf. That the tee boxes that I was playing from had weeds grown up about 6 feet, and there was no way you could tee the ball and actually hit the club that you were supposed to do.
Did you just play Desert Canyon this weekend, or what are you getting at?
And so it was one of those things, like, this was a great facility, unless you were playing from this certain set of tees, and then it was a horrible, horrible experience. And it was hole after hole after hole. And there was tee markers on that tee. It wasn't like they had been moved forward and taken the tee out of play. And, I, you know, it was one of those things that I could tell that that superintendent either didn't golf or he hadn't golfed in a long time, you know. And so I wrote this saying, like, look, superintendents, you need to be cognizant of the playable aspects of your, like, it, yeah. This isn't just a grass color and density equation, that the purpose is for golf. It's to sell golf.
Right.
And you could have a beautiful golf course that looks great from the tee box. You could have a beautiful golf course that looks great at the golden hour from pictures. Right. But
they always look the best at 35 miles an hour from the street when you're driving by.
But if there's some days where if you hit that fairway, do you know that every golfer, the ball just buries and plugs?
Yeah.
And, luckily for me, like, I've done enough golfing to be able to decipher what a good experience
right,
is.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And so I don't have to be out there every day, but I'm constantly taking feedback and stuff like that. And so there is an aspect of playing your golf course that makes sense, you can use it as an excuse to do other stuff, but there is actually I think there should be a concerted effort for more guys to play your facility, like you're saying, play it with the people that are taking care of the facility so they understand.
It's kind of like what we do, what we try to do in the mornings, go out first time. I'm sure with us three over here and the fourth, whoever comes in, is that's such a good little close. I mean, you and Fire Rock are literally, what, hole number four and hole number seven of each one of them or whatever. They touch each other.
Mm-hmm.
So, but getting other superintendents, getting the guys in your industry to go play each other's course, go play others all the time. That's where the Hack Attack comes in, because you see, hey, hey, what are you doing over there, and how are you doing this particular thing? Or I want that at my facility. Or, hey, you sure you want to be doing this? I mean, some of us are close enough where you're just like, hey, whatever you're doing over there.
Well, specifically, you, the Fire Rock Super and myself, right? The people that come and visit our facility more than likely are visiting your facility and, Fire Rock. And,
right.
And so, I've got to make sure that you're not doing anything that's like, edgy or Elon Musk cool, so that somehow, they come over to my place and say, like, oh, well, oh, you don't have that? Desert Canyon's got that, and vice versa, right?
Right.
Like, that there is, we're in a market where
Eagle Mountain didn't have frost. that's about all we get.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back in the day, or back before you guys got the better water, it was like, yeah, have you ever seen the ocean freeze? Just randomly? That's what they're dealing with, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I deal a lot with armchair superintendents, right?
We all do.
Yeah. And, trying to minimize or at least prepare for those discussions. And I think we're being fairly successful at it. I mean, you're on a list that's the top 10 revenue.
Number 9.
There's a reason why you're on that list, and that's a good thing. I don't look at it as a bad thing, and we should be on the list as well if Golf Digest or Golf Now actually check their stores.
Golf.com.
Yeah, Golf.com.
My guys.
Yeah.
They're my guys. I'm in there all the time. We got the call from Josh, our buddy over there. Did you see a college women's tournament where one of the girls had missed a putt and she like walked basically?
Oh, yeah. Huh.
Okay. We got a question. What do you guys think of that? And that's like, sometimes me and Dan have talked about this. We don't know if Josh calls us for information sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if it's in the evening, maybe one of us has had maybe a beer or two, and he'll just poke the bear. And me and him are just like children. So we think it's so funny to just continue like one-upping each other as far as the ridiculous joke goes. But he says, hey, yeah, I guess last week there was a golf tournament. What do you guys think about the girl stepping
in front of the other?
And then also too close. And it was like, man, you're reaching. You're reaching and you're asking the wrong people. By the end of this, however long exchange went, where it was like, did the other girl, you know, I basically said, did the other girl make a big stink and basically call her a fucking bitch and, you know, like spit at her? No, she didn't. Then it's no problem. And if anybody that's complaining about it, this was one of my responses, go sit next to the first green at the first tee time and then sit there all day and count footsteps around the cup all over that green between foursome until the last person walks off of that green. And if you haven't lost count after the first three groups because you're already in the thousands, none of that matters. It's not like she healed the cup and just started blasting it, you know, open and whatever. But it's like, man, people are reaching for some shit.
Well, maybe.
Those are your buddies. So they wrote this article and they put us at 9.
Well, maybe he knows
we should have been 10.
You have an opinion on everything, and it's going to be a fairly decent, like
it tries to be well thought out.
Me, when people seek my opinion, you're getting like a saltine version of it's going to be, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, that's not the best, but, you know, she might not have had a great day either. And, you know, why are we worried about the girl that
I think the last thing I wrote was, I can't wait to see the superintendent that you actually get a real answer from. Yeah. And then you have to write an article about it.
Yeah.
It's going to be so
because your opinions are always going to be a little bit more.
If you don't think I crank them up a notch too, like the real response I sent to him, I don't even need to say it, but it was to me and Dan hilarious. You know, I can just see Dan responding. And then of course we always turn it to the conversation that's just me and Dan. And it's like, hey, do you think he knew what he was getting into this morning when, or hey, the boys are buzzing, right? It was a couple of weeks ago. It had to be 8:30 at night and he sent one, and it was Dan finally after I bet 50 responses between me and Dan and zero from him. Mm-hmm. And I was just taking this question to this whole other level. Dan texts me, goes, the boys are buzzing right now. He goes, do you think Josh basically signed up for this one? Mm-hmm. And it was brutal, brutal.
That's what social media has done to some of these reporters and journalists is
people in general.
You know, we get, you know, in the golf industry, the news isn't, you know, it's not like the draft and football and all this other stuff, or, hey, here's all this edgy stuff with Lamar Jackson and whatever. Oh, yeah. And they always got content. You know, I think in the golf world, there's this lull between Sunday and Thursday, you know, and even those tournaments, they're not ramping up social media stuff till Saturday and Sunday.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so these people are just salivating to find something that is trending on Twitter and need somebody to comment besides the editor, you know. And I'm glad I'm not a social media you know, person, because it would be difficult to, not all content is good content. You
right.
Know?
And absolutely.
And in golf, every once in a while there's some great content and, you know, then there's just lulls.
Just lulls. But content in the game, apparently content is just content. They say, just keep firing it out. That's why I believe that you see some of the most ridiculous shit. 'Cause people feel that they want to somehow get as many millions of likes so they can monetize on it, you know, make money. And because people are making fucking tons of money, you know, being these type of guys that just sit on it and have, you know, 100,000 tweets, never mind likes. Could you imagine? I think I have like, I don't know. I can't even imagine how many I have. I probably put up 60 to 70 episodes and then couple pictures of Frankie. I've got to be at like under 200 actual tweets, and I tried at the beginning of this thing to like ramp it up and keep people engaged, but every time it was like, I don't even know if I care if they're engaged, you know. Obviously I kind of don't, you know. I like hanging out with my friends, drinking beer, talking shit.
I mean,
And some things, like I've said a million times on this, is as I speak it or as we sit here and talk about it, it's just like, oh, yeah, I just basically made up an idea that I'm going to fucking try tomorrow or next week.
I don't have the personality to be like a social media superstar, you know?
That, come on. You'd crush it on OnlyFans. Crush it. The fucked up part is we all would. Some motherfuckers are out there. They pay for anything. So I wouldn't put it past anybody.
No, but I do, you know, I watched last Friday. I watched Riggs and Billy Horschel in the Foreplay Pod, you know, at Sawgrass. At Sawgrass. And, you know, part of me goes, that's really cool. Like, I love golf to that. Mm-hmm. I feel like I love golf just as much as they do. And I feel like there's a ton of people in the industry that love golf that right. much. And the fact that they are able to monetize it and have a good, you know, drive enthusiasm in golf is so cool.
Absolutely. And it, you know, you were there. We had our latest subs and super at the bowling alley, which was kind of banana lands. Good turnout of people. Having Tuesday's or Thursday's league go on while you're having mm-hmm. a conference probably isn't the best. We learned from that, right? But Ernie Pock, superintendent of Greyhawk, mm-hmm. where they host the NCAA's mm-hmm. championships, the National Little Dudes, the kids, what is that? Is that the first tee program?
AJGA?
It's a national event, but they've got kids, or actually international, because they've got teams from all over the world, and it's teams of youngsters that are probably 7 to 13-ish. They host that as well, so it's on TV all the time. It's on ESPN. And we were... I thought the whole topic, or at least the general discussion, was supposed to be like, where is golf headed?
State of the golf industry.
State of the golf industry. And we listened to Ernie talk about the NCAAs and the NCAAs and how many of us are in there that don't host that, mm-hmm. don't really care to host that. We're worried about the dollars and cents that come through the door. So I raised my hand. Ed, I know you're listening. You gave me a look when I said this, but it was a general thing or an interest. What is your response? Is, or do you think the Barstool Classic was there?
Mm-hmm.
How much more better for the club do you think hosting the Barstool Classic? I'm talking getting the guys that love golf. They're our customers, right? Every one of them at some stage, you hope, thinks of golf as much as they love it, as much as they want to promote the game, as much as, again, we are in that same boat. What do you think the difference was is value is to host the Barstool Classic mm-hmm. versus the NCAAs and the kids?
So
Scottsdale, Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big twist, I believe.
Well, I think at one point in time, because I was just sitting off to the side, minding my own business, listening.
Crushing Dr. Peppers.
Listening to the everything. And I believe you raised your hand and said, I thought this was the state of the golf industry, not of the state of the golf industry in North Scottsdale or something similar to that.
That's probably exactly what I said. But yes, I'll say that again. I thought that that's what it was.
And
I put Johnny Webb on blast, not really on blast, but I conversated with him before and said, hey, I'm about to interject in this conversation. Mm-hmm. We need to talk about where we're at. And great, the golf needs the Pima Corridor. That's what we call mm-hmm. that stretch out here in Arizona where it's the highest of high-end clubs, great facilities, but that doesn't reach to even me. Like, we're borderline, like, we're in the middle of the road as far as the lower public end. So Johnny Webb, his golf course is, it's not Sunland Village, it's
Desert Sands.
Six guys at best, 60 people he's had as employees over 6 years, and four of them have had vehicles. He, I think, would be great to trade stories one day. You and him is the most fucked up shit that they've seen go sure. on. I say those guys, I've said it 100 times, they should be winning superintendent of the year mm-hmm. for the industry, not the one that's got millions of dollars and provides an unbelievable golf course. But the resources, I mean, these guys are just barely showing up and getting things done. So, yes, I asked that question, well, I asked him to introduce himself to everybody, because not everybody here knows. Yeah, I'm a loudmouth. The entire industry knows who I am. You know, you've been around for a long time. A lot of the industry, if not the entire industry, knows who you are. Ed Shapekiss, they know him. They know all these. Not many, only his neighbors, and if you've kind of run into him a few times, have met the Johnny Webbs, and they're as important to this industry and the game of golf as anybody out there doing this job.
Well,
and I mean, I'm biased towards this job because...
And it wasn't at that moment, but I did feel compelled to provide my two cents about education in the golf industry. Mm-hmm. What, you know, within Troon, we have a large variety of golf that we manage, from, you know, the $25 municipal golf course all the way up to very high-end private clubs, right? Like both ends of the spectrum.
Blackstone, and, ever hear of it?
And the state... Sweet. The state of the golf industry is all of that.
Yes.
It's all of that, right? And so when I was down at Whirlwind, you know, they had the Let Them Play Classic. It's when Barstool basically saw all these ladies. Oh, yeah,
that's right. I forgot you did one of these.
All those ladies down in at that regional tournament down in Louisiana, you know, there were storms. They basically, you know, it was supposed to be...
And also COVID. It was COVID time too, right?
And it's supposed to be kind of their last... For some of those ladies, it was going to be their last tournament, like collegiately, you know. And so Riggs kind of picks it up and sees like, oh my gosh, you know, this is just horrible. Like, as an industry, let's come together and figure this out.
Right.
So, you know... At Whirlwind, we had this awesome ownership group, and the GM was really cool, right? And so very quickly, we're able to put something together and have...
Who reached out to who? Do you remember?
Because
I don't see like a blanket. I don't remember the blanket like from Riggs saying what, who can...
Yeah, I remember him walking down the steps, and he did like his own little press conference, and he said like, oh, we're going to figure this out, right?
Yep.
And then... I believe, and somebody from Troon saw that, and then just started like Southern Dunes, Whirlwind. Let's figure this out.
Right.
And at the time, condition wise, and the ability to just on a whim kind of turn the facility around, I think Southern Dunes and Whirlwind were like where they were looking at. And so Whirlwind ends up being able to accommodate more with 36 holes,
right,
and we make it happen, right? And so, but afterwards, they did kind of Troon did an assessment, and I can't say how much money that the marketing value of was of hosting that, but it was well it was way more than we would have made on those days from a marketing standpoint. Right. And it's not all about making money. It, like in that case, it actually was about a charity event. Right.
Yeah.
But there was a dollar value associated with all the marketing associated with Whirlwind. Right. And so when you started talking about, hey, what does this Barstool Classic thing bring to Greyhawk, or what do you think it brings to the golf industry? I know, based upon the metrics of that other event, there is a significant value there, right? And obviously there.
And you've hosted the college girls before at any Suelo used to, right?
Oh yeah,
And so you understand like what those do versus.
Well, and I think if you looked at,
I guess I'm asking you to stroke my ego and say, yes, Matt, you're like, that's the state of our industry right there. We should be chasing that golfer, doing that thing, having a great time, drinking beers, playing golf, talking shit, right?
If I were to assess the major winners of last year, right? You got Cameron Smith and Scottie Scheffler, right? And they're not huge names. They're new to the golf industry, you know. But back in the day, we'd have these big tournaments, and golf was thriving on TV. TV was awesome for marketability,
right?
And you know, those things are trying to sort themselves out, whether it's LIV or the PGA Tour. They're trying to find this this enthusiasm of the golf watcher, right? But at the same time, if you review, like, look at Callaway Golf's numbers over the last year, right? And they're killing it. And yeah, they've got Topgolf, right? And so they're killing it. But Acushnet or Titleist also had record numbers last year. And that's not in viewership. That's people that are passionate about golf, mm-hmm. buying new golf clubs, playing golf.
Pretty sure during COVID, fucking Callaway's number one SKU was the K Sizzles from Costco.
Yeah.
All their clubs, they make it all. So that was their number one selling SKU was golf balls and their like wedges and shit. Now they have clubs. The Epics.
So talking about the state of the golf industry, I know rounds are slightly down this year, right? Whether that's weather related or not, but cost per round is up, which mm-hmm. is a good thing. But I think as far as enthusiasm is concerned, the there's tons of enthusiasm,
right?
And I personally feel like this social media contingent, whether it's Foreplay or Good Golf or some right. of these other guys.
Look at what those guys are getting endorsements from the Callaways, from the TaylorMades. You know, mm-hmm. they're using them as their catalyst rather than, you know, you see them swinging clubs more on Instagram than you ever see Scotty Scheffler hitting Team TaylorMades. And if I was into social media, that would be me.
Yeah. If you look at like Peter Finch Golf, stuff like that, mm-hmm. he's playing out at Whirlwind. And why is he playing out at Whirlwind? Because they know that the marketing direction is that way,
right?
You know that's the exposure, and that's the exposure to enthusiasm.
Yes,
right. And there's a difference, like just generic clicks on a video, right? And that's kind of the theme you see on Facebook is, let's see how long we can get somebody to watch a video, and so we'll screw around. Mm-hmm. Trying to do something and get somebody to watch this stupid video for 4 minutes, and at the end there's never any conclusion to the video, right?
Right.
That's the content creator, right? And so, but for us, we're selling golf and we're selling enthusiasm, and I think that...
Then why are people such cunts about it? Like, as far as golf, like the general, like these people here, like why I understand, and I love how you're like seeing to sell the game, because that's how we talk about it, is we're selling the good time. Like, this should be a good time. And what is it about the membership and the average, you know, I guess the older folk over 55 group, not to shove them in a bag, but
yeah,
I still have the friends that are the same way. This place sucks, or this is wrong. These greens are slow as they're hitting uphill and they fucking top the ball. It's like, dude, that's not the, you know, what is that? Why are people not buying that enthusiasm? Or maybe we just work and live in a region that the old ones haven't gone yet.
I think if you figure out that equation, you should let our marketing department know so they can, you know, market right. to people. But I mean, I think it partially is a generational thing. I mean, if you look at,
our parents' age, it was very much still a rich man's sport.
Sure.
And even though the price hasn't changed and it hasn't gotten any cheaper, maybe I guess that's why our generation doesn't retire. We work till the end because we're just burning our money on fun and, you know, things like this.
Yeah,
So every demographic seems to play golf now. It's not this elite, you know, higher end income sport.
Well, and I think that's been the struggle over the years. In public play, not as much, but in private clubs, right? In private clubs, you've got them trying to reinvent themselves, right? We have some facilities that the membership is aging out,
right?
And what direction is the club going? And are we marketing to, say, like a junior member that's sub 40, mm-hmm. right? And so in that case, we need to make the golf course set up a little bit more fun, a little bit more. And then you've got these baby boomers that are retiring. They're starting to golf. They're more private club driven. And so, well, we don't want a challenging experience. We want to go out there and make par no matter what's going on, you know, like because... And the struggle is just going to be how do you set the golf course up and make them successful? You know, how do you appeal to both those golfers? How do you, because if you walked in your pro shop right now, what does the merchandise look like? Is it bad birdie stuff?
It's everything.
Right. It's got to be. Right. And, because that's the market. That's the market here. And how do you do that out on the golf course? How do you market to everybody?
What put is that? Speakers in the fucking golf carts. Sell speakers in the pro shop.
Right. Yeah. And that's going to be... it's going to be interesting to see how golf adapts to that. And you know, you're seeing some of that in... hell, you see it with the NFL. You see the NFL is starting to broadcast some of their stuff on Nickelodeon.
Right.
Right? They do the slime time. They do, field goal gets kicked through the uprights, and there's SpongeBob, right?
Right.
And golf is going to have to do a similar thing because you're demanding.
I think they're doing it. I think as far as it's professional levels and it's broadcasting of the game on TV and the hype behind it there, I think they're nailing it. Mm-hmm. They're absolutely. And as you said, you know, you look at that leaderboard and you don't see the big names. That is so good for golf. But probably come Sunday, just like at Bay Hill, all of them will start climbing up this list. But boy, it's great to see this on day one and two where it's a mixed bag, as it makes that shitty golfer feel like they got a fucking chance.
How about,
I think they're nailing it, and I think this the Live Golf thing again is pushing this to be better. And I mean, I don't know. Go back to as many episodes, and when this fucking shit came out, I said right away it's the best goddamn thing that's going to happen to golf is to have a heel.
Mm-hmm.
WWE got so much better when Hulk Hogan became a heel because mm-hmm. then it was cool to be a fucking heel.
Mm-hmm.
So all the good ones. And it made the product that much better. And I think it happens with as soon as the Yankees became the most hated and the Dodgers become the most hated fucking teams in baseball, it becomes good for everybody else. Like it's all, mm-hmm. it's always good to have that something pushing you, you know, and now golf has that pushing. So it's dividing these dudes. They want, I know that, you know, the guys on the Live, the ones that are there, they have to be like chomping at the bit so bad to want to play in the Masters. If they're not, then fuck them like all over, because they should be like DJ and Cam. They're like, if one of us can win this fucking thing, it'll be the best goddamn thing ever. And the PGA guys, players, no way. Commissioner, it'll be the best goddamn thing if one of these fucking Live dudes wins this thing.
Have you been watching Full Swing?
Oh, yeah. I watched every one of them in like two nights.
Yeah. I think it's interesting to see how, like, obviously they try to play off of that, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's Matt Fitzpatrick and some Ian Poulter and some of them,
right,
trying to show that dynamic, trying to provide an opinion on mm-hmm. which side's good and which side's evil.
Right. But this was still, it was being taped when it was, they were still on the fence, a lot of
sure.
them, you know? I mean, that thing, I think it's such a good, shows like that. Did you watch The Drive?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you could give a fuck about auto racing, but, or even boxing back when HBO used to do it for the upcoming big fight. Once you start getting inside of like, you get a taste of maybe what they're really like, and you're like, oh, these fucking people are always all just like me. They think about this whole thing just how I would. It's not this weirdo world. I didn't really learn much because I think I pay attention a lot to golf, but my wife was like, whoa, this is fucking awesome. You know?
Yeah, well, I think it's cool to see the parallels between you've got a Brooks Koepka and a Jenna Sims and the life that they live and their personalities and all this other stuff. And then at the same time, you got Joel Dahman and that aspect to it. And, you know, kind of outside the show, you know, right, we had Max Homa win, and then he comes into town and plays at Papago, right? The day after he wins a tournament, he comes in
and wins $430 or something like that at Papago Skins game.
Yeah, and I think like it's interesting because I think that's kind of a generational thing too. Is you see this guy that is just passionate about golf.
Right.
And he's passionate about golf, whether it's at Riviera or he's passionate about golf, of whether it's a Muni.
Do you think that both him and Joel? Now we're talking on two different. They both looked at life, like both of them faced. Joel got cancer, looked at life a whole different way.
Mm-hmm.
Max, I mean, he was one of the best in the world as a junior, and then comes on the scene, all of a sudden can't hit a fucking golf ball. He's got, you know, Chuck Knobloch disease.
Yeah.
Can't throw from second base to first at this point. So his career is almost over, and he has to go fight back through Q school. Now he's like, okay, I found it all. I'm as rich as rich can be. Let's just have a fucking good time with this. And it's actually helped both of them be successful because they just pull this pressure off. It's like, the shit I faced before, all of this could have been gone.
Well, it makes me just wonder, is this guy just got to experience what being at the top is like? I want to be playing at Sunday in contention and executing. And the fact that you can go out the next day and he's enthusiastic, like the next day he's like, oh, I'm just going to go play in that. And it must mean that the feeling is...
I think they're just so competitive. Could you imagine winning the Genesis and then wheeling back and getting your boat raced by a bunch of dudes in a fucking Skins game? Like, I think there's that fight in you that says, nope. I've got to go win this thing because otherwise these fucks are going to, I'm going to have to hear it forever.
Yep. But still, it just goes to show how fun Skins games are.
That is true. It's no good for your golf game, but it is fucking fun as shit.
So, you know that I've mentioned about being pretty saltine, that you're never going to get a lot of panache out of me. But
panache.
Well, just
that is a word that is in 122 episodes for sure. It's never been said on this podcast.
But, you know, we had recently at the golf course, we had a homeowner adjacent to the golf course have a cat get out.
Oh, yes. I heard.
Yeah. What did you hear?
I just heard that she had showed up in like her Lambo.
Yeah, Rolls Royce.
Rolls Royce. Oh, okay. That was it. That's all I really heard is that she lost her kitty.
Yeah. So we had a homeowner adjacent to the golf course who's been known by some of the staff members show up and she's lost her cat. Except it's like a African serval or it's like a status symbol.
Oh,
apparently.
Whoa.
Yeah, they're illegal in like 23 states or something like
Holy
that.
Holy shit.
Weighs 40 pounds. It's a predator.
Whoa. I did not hear this part of it.
Yeah.
I just thought it was just like her house cat.
No. Yeah. And so, interestingly enough, she's an OnlyFans model Instagram model.
Yeah.
And so...
She's November 2002 penthouse pent of the month.
See, I don't...
A friend of my friend told me that. It's true. She's known.
So, so she shows up, brings a flyer to the maintenance shop, and now it's impossible to get work done.
Because oh, yeah.
guys are coming in with like London broil strapped to their shoulders, hoping that this cat is going to come out of the desert and attack them, and they can somehow finagle a future with Mrs. November.
November 22.
Yeah. It's been comical, to say the least, because...
Hasn't that thing gotten out a couple times before, too? I've heard.
This is the first to me, but Craig at Fire Rock said that, but the fact that it weighs 40 pounds is just insane.
Yeah, it's a bobcat.
Yeah.
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 But it's like leopardy something. Not that I've seen it. I just know the type of cat. Yeah. What the fuck?
But it is kind of comical because, you know, our GM, he's awesome, right? And so everybody in player services is talking about this girl, everybody behind the counter, the golf course maintenance team. And, so he pulls me to the side and is like, what's this girl famous for? And OnlyFans. And he's like, explain to me what OnlyFans is. And I was like, let me think of the best way to describe this to you. She's a pornographer.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh. And he's like, that must pay good. Does it pay good? A Lambo and a Rolls Royce good.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, shit. And this cat good. Like, yeah. That can't be. Like,
yeah.
How did you get that thing?
Well... If we catch it...
It still had, as far as you know, it's still on the loose?
Oh, it's still on the loose,
yeah. Oh, he gone. He just gone because he's just a predator. Not that he's dead. He's probably slaying shit.
That's exactly what I said. One of our Babcock girls says, I feel sorry for the little kitty. I'm like, he is an African wildcat. He's 50% cat, and then they breed him with something else that's like half velociraptor.
Yeah.
You know, and... wherever he is, he's raping and eating whatever feels like. Fuck,
yeah.
Yeah. It
he's having the time of his life.
She's inquired with a special company to try to find it, and they've showed us pictures of where it is, and in all of these poses that people have taken pictures of it while trying to get it, it's just chilling.
Yeah.
It's just up in a tree, just, you know, like looking like a puma with its feet dangling down. Yeah. Like, he's not in distress at all.
No.
He's just, you know, hanging strutting. Out. Yeah. But everybody. And
we know how a golf course is. That thing's a buffet for any predator, you know, coyotes, bobcats that we got out here. There's no reason to ever leave. It's like being homeless. Like, why would you ever leave San Diego? Like, ever.
Right.
Like, I can never. Even imagine being, I would just start walking. Like, I got nothing else to do. I'm just going to start walking west. And when I fucking hit San Diego, I'm anchoring. So, same thing. Like, yeah. A predator like that, why would you not live next door to a golf course? It's like, it's fucking buffet city. Anything you want. Well, hundreds of them.
I'm convinced that he knows how to get back. Like,
he just doesn't want to be on OnlyFans anymore. Yeah.
That he can smell where he's been. He can walk right back in the opposite direction. He's just kind of done with that lifestyle, I think.
Done being in the Lambo. You know, he wants to go live his real life. Shit.
Well, I've got $10 on Jason Day to win this.
Oh, really? What were the odds?
500 to 1.
Well, that's pretty good.
Not 50.
It's worth a shot. It's worth a shot just because he's been playing pretty well. You know, he's made a bunch of cuts. He's on my DraftKings list that we did.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, because do you do that, Casey? Do you get that email to get in with the DraftKings?
Yeah, I was included. I didn't partake in it this time. I did partake.
$20 is too much for you?
The reply all for everybody over and over and over again. I didn't get in at the last second there.
Oh, my team's doing sick. They're in 21st out of 28 people.
Do you get your money back in last place again?
Yeah, you do. Yeah, I got Homa, Finau, Tom Kim, Jason Day, Thigala, and the human ATM machine, Matt Kuchar.
All right.
Who's tied for 97th. Sick weekend.
It's a good the thing fuck? It wasn't the $600 that somebody threw out.
Oh, yeah, that James. Yeah, James would definitely pay the $600. Like, no problem.
So. Mm-hmm.
Shit, you got anything else you want to cover? What's your plan for you starting any transition issues? You brushing anything? You grooming? You spraying? You fucking tinkering with anything? Lowering heights?
Yeah, so all of the above. So
all right, good. Thank you very much, everybody. See you next week.
No, you know, the transition is something that has been talked about this on here over and over and over again, and we all do it a little bit. There's all the little different nuances that everybody does it.
We basically have heights go down, whether brushes or verticutters, whatever you can do to stand it up to keep, continue to, and maybe tick a little bit of the arena. That's pretty basic. After that,
yeah, it's
fertility gets different.
What's always interesting to me is, and last year was, right, so I'm kind of advising however many people that I go see, right? It's like, okay, well, this is what is preferred, and we cater that based upon the property, right? We're at some properties that you can close down during the summer, right? It's like, all right, you're going to do fairly aggressive, and then you're just going to rip the Band-Aid off right here, right? And so keep it decently until right here. And there's other places that their summer closure schedule is like, I close for 4 days in mid-July. It's like, okay, well, then you're going to have to start transitioning.
Now,
yeah. And so we're peeling back the onion more aggressively initially, and then we see how that looks. And then if we were too aggressive on the front end, then we just back off a little bit, right? And so, yeah, if I'm like at Eagle Mountain, I'm supervising it consistently, and so I get more aggressive there than everywhere else, right? And so I recommend Sapphire usually for those people that want to start going as early as possible, and you know, not any more than 8 ounces. Any less than 4, I really think is not enough. That initially,
would you consider it more as a growth regulator? Like,
yeah.
Would you, like, if you put that in there, where it's going to hit the ryegrass, not the Bermuda grass?
Yeah. So
that's kind of how I play with these things right now.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, the Sapphire was originally developed to take lawn daisy out of ryegrass, right? And so they started doing the, I'll do 1X, 2X, 4X, whatever. And they saw where damage started to occur on ryegrass, right? And so at the 4X rate is where that's the top rate of taking lawn daisy out, right? And so technically, if you're in a good environment that has lawn daisy, you can spray ryegrass with 4 ounces and not have any issues.
Yeah.
And so I always, when I tell people if they're going to spray Sapphire, is, hey, just FYI, like, that 4 ounce rate is what normally doesn't cause damage in an environment with English lawn daisy. And so if you're trying to regulate it, you need to use more than that.
Right. Yeah.
But where that threshold is depends on how much you're watering the golf course, what the weather's looking like.
But I'm using these growth regulators, like, as of now, as kind of, I slowly go get the verticutter, tickle, lower heights, re-raise, you know, ding the fuck out of the ryegrass, you know, raise the height, scalp, you know, lower it again, beat it up to try and get rid of it. And then it comes a time I start top dressing it, and by then it's like, fuck it. It's all going to go once the sand hits it. That's because we're trying to keep the cash register going.
Yeah.
That's just versus what you said. If you get a private club that's able to close where they can just nuke it, they ain't touching it right now at all. It's just, hey, let's keep it as awesome as we possibly can.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to try and get the solid tiner out there and start banging some holes, get some, you know, open up those soils to get the temperatures up there, but wear this long, just keep mechanically doing it until three or four applications come June 1st, it's gonzo.
Well, what's amazing is if you go out right now and start verticutting stuff, I will go out and verticut, and the next day it looks like I sprayed like
iron on it.
Yeah, 15 pounds of iron. Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's just how that canopy is responding.
You pull out that mat layer of shit clippings that have been sitting there. Like, we just verticut. I call it verticut. I basically groomed the fairways aggressively. It did not verticut into, you know, you basically put it as low as you can before you touch a piece of Bermuda. You pull up a handful of clumps. If there's Bermuda in there, raise that another turn or two, you know. Okay, one little piece of Bermuda, that's fine. Now let's start pulling it. But that's what we did fairways this week, and I want to do roughs next week, but I'm thinking I'm just going to start lowering roughs because in come, hopefully, the autonomous mowers, they're supposed to be here Monday, so by the time you hear this, we've probably already started. The infrastructure is in. As far as the conduit to pull the wires, we are going to basically show up, start programming one, and, you know, National Turf will start pulling wire, plugging them in. Pulling wire, plugging them in. We'll build kind of temporary little poles for the transponders, level out a piece of ground for the plug-ins of these mowers, and then watch it. Me and Jeff decided we'd watch it for probably, I don't know, a couple weeks, 2-3 weeks, and then go, okay, we're building a cement pad that holds all of these, and we're going to put it over here because that makes sense. And then these poles on that temporary thing, it's really ugly, or is it kind of hidden? So how dressy do we need to get with this thing? Then we'll put that in there. That big was Mr. Spahn put it in the drink 17 at Sawgrass. I definitely heard that over the airways. But they'll be here. And things that I think about as far as, like, the brushing. Like, it's like, okay, I think, what am I going to do with my old equipment? I'm going to retrofit one with fucking some brushes on the front of it. Never mow anything. But just in this time of year, just drive that around and brush. And at night, out come the mowers. Just one guy just brushes. I think, because they're rotary mowers. Like, this hit me yesterday. I was like, fuck, we don't have anything standing this shit up. So here's another thing. If you're going to go fully autonomous, remember, keep your equipment around, because there's going to be shit like this that's going to be needed to be done. But it's something that I would have never, ever been able to do if it wasn't for the autonomous, because now I just got one guy mowing. We're brushing as many fairways as you can in the morning till golf catches them. The mowers will go out, do whatever. And as long as you stay on that, but I guess, do you buy the tractor with the big fucking rotary brush thing and drive around the entire golf course?
Yeah,
that was literally an idea that came up while we were sitting here.
We're on the edge of this interesting time in golf where, you know, technology hit us in the late 80s where we automated all the irrigation, right? And so no longer was this guy that drove around in a Ford pickup truck with a box in the back that had, you know, quick couplers.
And he did it at night. Well, I'm sure they still do that. Troy Jastal, that's in Wisconsin, Stevens Point, he was on the podcast 2-3 years ago. He finally got a fucking irrigation system, but otherwise it was, or computers to run it. Otherwise he was the nighttime irrigator as well. Still to this day.
Right. And so golf automates that stuff, right? And we're happy with it. That sounds good, you know? And to where now we totally trust the irrigation system to run perfectly. And now we're in this next stage where, you know, what's this next type of automation look like? And that's something, like, internally with Intrune is like, we want to be on time to the party, you know? Yeah.
Luckily, Martin is so techie that he wants to be right with it or ahead, which helps, you know, me tremendously, even with just everything around here. So tech driven. I mean, there's a fucking camera in every corner in the side of this place, hidden in every succulent.
Sure. Well, and you know, so when you had that demo day out here and I'm looking at this and just trying to kind of wrap my head around what you're doing, right? And it makes sense. It pencils out on paper, and it's going to pencil out in all the good ways, right? And, you know, it's how I'm really interested to see it. I think that's going to explode to where I see good things happening in that market.
Right.
And it's solving a problem for people.
Right.
Right. Because a lot of questions that I get are about labor market and conditioning and having to defer.
What's your feeling on it? The labor market. I mean, if you listen, you hear mine. We're short people, not capable, not fucking lazy, whatever. We're at the number of workers is our problem. Available people.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had a facility that we took over in November. That we lost all the employees during the transition. That some employees chose to stay with the previous ownership group, but they sold the golf course. So some people chose to stay with that golf course, and other people couldn't pass E-Verify on the way over, right? And so within golf course maintenance, they went from 13 employees to literally zero. Zero. No superintendent, no assistant, no irrigators, nothing.
Whoa.
On the clubhouse side, they, you know, lost the GM. They chose to transfer or to stay with the company that they were at. And so this facility lost F&B, lost everything, right? And so several weeks before this happens, I know that it's going to happen. And so I start inquiring about, you know, oh, where am I getting the superintendent from? Where am I getting the assistant from? Where am I doing that? And the interesting thing is, you know, Troon's big. Troon's big, right? And so, but even for us, it was really difficult to kind of manipulate and get people to the site because all of our facilities operate at kind of the standard level, right? And so if I'm saying, hey, give me a volunteer to help me out at this other place, they're now
down
operating at a loss. Right. Yeah. And I can't impose that on, because each of our golf courses has a different owner. Right. And so is it fair to one owner to remove and send to another place? And, in a short term period, it's part of the being in the system, but long term it's not. Right. And, oh man, just the turmoil of finding the right people, finding the right people at the right wage, right? And that's what's just getting interesting.
What level do you think would, what level of dollar per hour or salary, whatever it is, would solve the problem? What would fill Eagle Mountain full staff? Like, what is that number? Like, where you're just like, how much do I have to throw at it to get quality filled staff, not just filling it. I'm talking guys, people that come rolling in there that are competent for the job, worth it, work every day, yada, yada, yada. Everything's great. But what level of dollar do you think across the board it has to get to average?
So last time I was on this podcast, I talked about how I started at $5.25 an hour, right?
Right.
And, you know, and it's been a long time since then. And, you know, back at a couple facilities that I've moved to through the years, I'll get to these places and it's like, well, that guy got a 2% or 3% raise year after year after year. And if I track it back, it's like, this guy is just getting a cost of living increase year after year, right? And especially nowadays, that cost of living increase isn't like 3%, it's now 7%. And what does that look like, right? And the struggle is, it's not just a golf course maintenance thing, because I could sit here, and obviously we're big advocates for golf course maintenance, right? Like, I want to, if there's dollars at the facility that are being divvied out, I want them to go to golf course maintenance.
Right.
Right. And so, as far as assistance is concerned, I think the industry's been getting better at giving money towards assistance. As far as irrigators is concerned, people are just throwing money at irrigators nowadays. The same thing with mechanics. They're hard to find, and so people are, and those are the, those, they're vital to the golf course. And so when I get reached out from somebody that basically says, hey, we've got this mechanic, we've been looking, we're going to offer him this, it has been extremely rare for me to say, no, that's too much. But as far as Eagle Mountain is concerned, right, we, when I first got there,
Eagle Mountain. So I guess what I'm asking is, not those, I don't think I'm talking assistant, I'm talking your general labor. What is that number? Because it's going, they're all going to affect what your mechanic makes, what your assistant makes, what you make. You know, like, how close do we, does it get where the you and I's not now, because we're, I mean, our future, if we want to dial it back and be like, you know what, I want to stay in the golf, but I don't want the bullshit. I just, maybe I want to go sit on a mower or whatever. What are we getting paid? Like, how high is it going to get? Because I think soon you're going to be able to make a very good living out here.
So when I first got to Eagle Mountain, we had a little less than 10 guys on the crew, right? And so the average wage of them was $15.50 an hour, right? And so the consensus was, we are struggling to find people, right? And so it's like, all right, well, very quickly we'll go to $16.50 an hour. And then what I did was I put an ad out in the Fountain Hills Times, and I basically said, like, great for retirees, come out Monday, Wednesday, Friday, help me mow fairways, help me mow greens, right?
Yeah.
You're not going to be fly mowing, you're not going to be whatever. And I posted that job at $17.50 for retirees, just trying to get the enthusiasm going. And my phone never stopped ringing. For weeks and weeks and weeks, I had these retirees, men, women, all trying to come in and get these jobs. And so I saturated, I hired like six part-timers that just did my mowing, right? And gosh, they were so...
How did that go over with the rest of the guys that were on your crew that maybe you just took the mower out from underneath them?
Well, it was kind of a circus when I got there. And so everybody felt like they were being overutilized. And, you know, it's like you're not only are you paying me $15.50, but I, all right, you're done with that, now go do this. All right, you're done with that, now go do this. Oh, this guy didn't do this. Oh, the ranger found this due to, you know. And now all of a sudden, you know, and so I explained to both of them that this was going to happen. It's like, look, guys, we don't have a ton of people, but what we're going to do is, we're going to get some part-timers in here. They're just part-timers. They're not eligible for benefits and all this other stuff. And they're going to come in and help us out on these days. And so on Tuesdays, Thursdays, Saturdays, and Sundays, you guys are going to be doing this stuff. And amazingly, the crew is really cohesive and good now, but it took some facilitating on my end and hiring the right people, right? And but as far as the, if we went $18.50, something like that, we'd be in a really good spot as far as everyone is concerned, but it would just be because we stole them from somewhere else.
Right.
And that's when it goes to
22. That's when it goes to 23.
Right.
That's, and how high are we getting where we're all like, hey, we've got everybody back doing this job, manual labor. If you're going to go and say, hey, welcome to, you know, the coffee shop, what can I make you? And they're making $18 an hour plus tips, or $7.15 plus tips, whatever it is. AC, just deal with a person in and out. And then here, it's not the most glamorous job, other than if you give a shit or play the game, our end of it. How high? I think you could pay $25 an hour, and I still don't think we'd be fucking getting what we want. Or what we expect, or quote unquote used to have.
I think it's difficult to decide on what that value is because it depends on it depends on who you're working for. It depends on what you're doing. It depends on what needles the facility is moving, right? Like you could go in and talk to a barista at a random coffee shop, right? And they're making whatever it is, right? $16 an hour plus tips. And you're going to get one that is like at a mom and pop barbershop and they're going to tell you, oh man, I love my job. This is the greatest. And I love it because everybody, you know, my manager is concerned about me. They let me know. And then you go to like a cookie cutter barista at another place and they're going to go, no, the system is just chewing me up, you know? And I think that's how golf courses work too, is that it's not necessarily a dollar figure associated with it. That yes, there is a cost of living standard, but at the end of the day, that guy wants to know that he's a valued part of the team, that he's seeing constant improvement. And
I agree with you 100%. I think that goes on in every life.
And that's where I've succeeded in the past, right? But I have experienced some hardships from, for example, the new guy at Fire Rock is trying to steal an irrigator from me. And me and him are now,
you know, leg wrestle.
I don't know if we're gonna leg wrestle, but I will.
Does he do CrossFit too?
If he's listening, and he probably is, he should realize
he doesn't listen ever.
He should realize that I'm going to shut down his future in the golf industry after Fire Rock if he chooses to hire this irrigator.
Yep, I get it. Yeah. I would do the same if I was in your shoes.
Yeah, it's just phenomenal. It's like
if I was in your shoes and you were looking to fill someone's shoes, I would do that.
This guy's got a new job, and all of a sudden he thinks he's the president of the world.
Running this side of the town.
Yeah.
Wait till we bring him to DJs. Show him off to the perfect.
But it's something that I never thought that I would extend this amount of money for this irrigator, and then somebody would not only match it, but then try to beat it.
Right.
You know, is, and I'm just baffled because, you know,
I think it just proves to the point that how valuable that person is, how valuable your mechanic is, how valuable your good assistant is. Well, but it also, I'm back to the point, is how valuable the rest of your crew is, you know, your grunt guys. I don't know. I could talk about this forever because I don't think there's fucking enough people to fill all of these jobs. That's where we're fucked.
Well, that's something that we should have talked about with the state of the golf industry, right? That I visited a shop about 2 months ago. That there was no lights in the shop, right? That the building should have been condemned, right? And so all these guys met outside and, you know, looked at this whiteboard with a flashlight onto what holes they're going to go, you know, go and prepare in the morning, right? And so you got one guy on a Sampro, one guy on a greens mower. They would cut cups every other day, right? We placed a superintendent there, and the dude loves his job. He loves his job. It's like, man, this is
the Johnny Webbs of the world.
Right. This is golf at its core.
Yeah. The purest, but core.
And the people that are working there love it. They're having a good time, right? And so it's weird that on some level, right, where we throw out this minimum number, like what should people be making, it's like
it all comes down to, do you give a shit or you do not give a shit about whatever you do?
Right.
So we need to find the end of the answer is we need to find the workers like everybody else that gives a shit about what they're going to do.
They believe in the direction that your golf course is going, right? That's it at the end of the day. And that's where, like, the Eagle Mountain was in a decent place when I got there, right? That they were changing owners, and you know, we come in, but for sure, I sell them on resources and say, hey, we're going to give you a little bit more resources now. But at the end of the day, what I sold them on was, look, we're going to change up the program here. And it's going to become that you're not going to have to come in and ask me for a tool that we don't have anymore, that I'm going to get you all the tools, right? If you have a complaint, it's going to be fielded and a response is yeah. right. And I think we've seen success in just doing these simple things, which is trying to follow up with, I can't imagine some of these people working at these, whether they're industry related or landscaping related, how difficult it would be, you know, to work for that wage
right.
and not feel like it's like, I'm 22 and am I going to be making this forever? Because, you know, my boss doesn't show any enthusiasm in coaching or training or helping me succeed.
Right.
And that at the end of the day, that's where we all need to be a little bit better I think if you look out for some of those people, the golf course is going to get better. And in turn, then when it comes time to assess reviews for management, and that you're going to get benefited.
Right. I guess I'm looking for the, how do we coax them? Not coax them, but what level of the benefit? You know, I guess for lack of better terms, do I have to just sit there and kiss people's asses all day? No. Do you have to give them uniforms? Do you have to feed them every day? Do you have to make... Like, what level does it have to get to where everybody feels part of the team? Because you see it all the time. Hey, you can give away everything. If somebody bitches about not having enough at all times, you know, do you see bonus programs helping at all in these types of, you know, to hire on? Are you getting people that hire on, grab a bonus and bail? Or do they hire on and then immediately feel that they're part of the team, per se? And they stick around, and
it's obviously depends, right? Like when I talk to my assistants or when I talk to some of these superintendents that I'm providing advice to, right? It's leading across cultures and leading across generations. Different cultures are different, right? And so you have to treat them differently. That with certain cultures you can be very direct, and some cultures you have to be very indirect, right? Americans, Australians, you can tell somebody one thing and then repeat it three times, and that's okay. That's what we do as a society. It's how we ensure that stuff's going to get done properly. If you look at it amongst Asian cultures or Latin cultures, they don't like that type of repetition because they like these informal nuances. And so you need to understand that when you're talking to these people and how they, and it's just difficult. And the same thing across generations, right, is these retirees that I have working for me, it's really easy for me to make them feel part of something bigger. And because they were already part of something yep. bigger in their
right.
past
yep.
life, right? And so they come in, they've succeeded in their life, and now they're just looking to honestly have kind of a social thing going on
mm-hmm.
and then also feel like they're part of something. It's like, oh, I'm going to come in, I'm going to mow. And they really do value
yep.
that they're doing something as part of a team because
absolutely.
They've seen it in different things versus the 17.
I see that totally in my older guys, like 100%.
The 17-year-old that I just hired is I'm filling the time between when he wakes up and when he's able to play video games. And if
and look at OnlyFans.
Yep, probably on the clock
17.
Too.
You better be.
But, and so trying to empower him as part of something.
Right.
That he doesn't even know what he's part of something in his life, you know? And so with him, it's just making sure that letting him know that he can be successful at certain things, right? Where maybe he would fail normally. It's like, oh, look, dude, you're doing a good job here. Let's put
you
on something else.
Get to be dad for the day.
Oh, man, that was... And, yeah, there's times where that's kissing somebody's butt, but...
in that situation, sometimes, you know, maybe he's never even had that. So now you're, like, you catch that, you go, whoa, he just lit up when I just said, hey, great job, because he's never had, or she's never had, somebody say, great job. So that's a weird fucking... not to go dad side, but neither one of us are dads.
No, not at all.
But
I know
you totally can see, like, hey, Matt, we got one that we gotta fucking limp along here.
If you asked me when I started this career, John, how many grown men would cry in your office? I would say it's going to be zero. This is never going to happen. And I have had more than a dozen grown men cry in my office from really good things and from bad things, you know, and we just need to remain cognizant as it is very easy for us to prescribe a people as a number is, oh, okay. Just like your auto mowers, right? It's like, I need X number of auto mowers in order to mow today.
Right.
And so I need one bunker guy, two greens mowers, two whatever. At the end of the day, those are people.
Right.
And it's for some of us, it's really hard to see that if we, there really is, there's lots of data that shows just investing a little extra time into everybody saves the company so much money, right? And that extends to every single level of the operation. It's the whole reason why In-N-Out can charge a certain amount of money and works people a
right.
certain amount of way. And I think that I read a Simon Sinek book one time, and he was talking about the guy that started Shake Shack. And he was talking about how his company is 51% kind of humanitarian, 49% innovation. And he said that you always have to err on the humanitarian
human side
yeah,
of it.
That you can be robotic as you want, but everybody needs to know that they're part of something. And in our industry, it's very easy for us.
I better get to work.
It's very easy for us to
get to work on that class.
To be the other way, right? It's very easy for us to
absolutely
because that's what we do. It's like, oh, this is how much nitrogen you put out. There's a number associated with that. Oh, here's growing degree days. There's a number associated with that, and we manage all
this
stuff.
18 holes is a number associated to that.
But
I have this many acres. I need.
Yeah, and so it's very easy for us to, like, Excel spreadsheet a golf operation.
Right.
And it's getting to the point where a lot of times where I'm providing site visits to guys and I'm driving around, we don't always talk about grass. It's like, this is what's going to make you successful at the facility. And hopefully... I for sure want the industry to adapt to cost of living stuff because there, you know, 2001 and we're doing $5.25 an hour
right.
and tee times are 250. I know what the margins were back then.
Right.
And it's harder to run a golf business nowadays and golf pros should be doing the same thing. They should be making more GM. Everybody should be thriving in this market. It's just how far down the ladder has that syrup dripped? And unfortunately, I think in our areas, depending on the market, some markets have adjusted, right?
Yeah.
And there's other markets that hasn't. And we're just going through a stage where, you know, hopefully the economy and costs, but the golf course is being bombarded by both ends, you know?
Right, yeah. Yeah,
and I don't know. All I know is, you know, we talk about transition, at the state of the industry thing down at the bowling alley. Which, by the way, Craig bowls
bananas.
I know
bananas. I damn near almost bet a paycheck.
You called me a liar. I think
I called you a legit liar. I called you a legit liar. So we're down in there at the Suds and Supers, and Jonathan goes out to receive a phone call. He comes back inside and he says, "Hey, did you see Craig come through here? This is Craig Wehrlein, past superintendent at Fire Rockies, now at Phoenix Country Club. Did you see Craig come through here?" And I was like, "No." He's like, "He just came through." And I'm like, "Is he here at the event?" "No." I called you a liar. I said, "There's no way that Craig Wehrlein was at the AMC, Bowlaroo, Bowlaroo in Scottsdale at 2 something in the afternoon, in the afternoon. On a fucking Thursday, and he didn't come to the event." And it went on. You're like, "No, he dabbed me up, but I was on the phone," mm-hmm. "and he had his little dolly."
Yeah, dolly. Two different balls.
Yeah, different balls, shoes go in there. And then we started bowling after our event, and I am again calling you a liar 100 times, and you said, "No, here, watch this. I will just text him." And you just said, "Where are you at?" Mm-hmm. Not, "Did I see you at the fucking bowling alley?" Mm-hmm. Like, "What the fuck was that? How the hell are you here?" And he said, "I'm gone. I'm at home." "Were you just at the bowling alley?" "Yeah, I had a lesson."
Yeah.
So he came in for a Thursday lesson, and he's in a bowling league over there, and he's got it all. You said the dolly, the two balls, shoes.
Not ashamed either.
That is crazy. Crazy to me that I think a bowling, I have been in them, they're as fun as ever, but I was a house ball guy. Use whatever they're giving it out. I'm not into that shit, but maybe it would make me better.
But one of the things that was mentioning was, you know, Andrew,
I bowled a 236 while we were there.
Really?
Yeah.
Over how many games?
We played 3 games. And my team, we had a run, then we had bet $10 a guy. But yeah, in one of them I had a 236.
That would I
house 80, ball
84 three games in a row. That's how I would get the 236. Yeah. No, but Andrew Hitchcock, he you know, asked about, this is a La Nina year. What's going on with transition? And
by the way, Andrew Hitchcock is an amazing bowler. Apparently, he's got a couple 300 games in him. Never seen him bowl. He was there, didn't bowl.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's like me being a plus two handicap.
He's a VP and had to deal with VP stuff.
But, no, so I think along with the increases in wages and all this other stuff is my commentary is everybody's playing by the same rules, whether it's transition, whether it's hiring people, and I'm just going to try to do it better than everyone else.
Yep.
And, you know, so for those people out there, just think of that mentality. Think about the ways that you can improve your transition.
And if it's offering a guy a couple bucks more compared to your neighbor, then that's what it is. It's a dog.
Yeah. If I've got to, you know, hire this retirees and have a conversation with him about the weather a couple times a week, then I'm going to do it, you know? Yeah. And that's what everybody needs to kind of look at is there are some dollars and cents associated with it, but there are some stuff in your back pocket that you just need to maybe take advantage of it, make your life a little easier and
get autonomous mowers. Sit back and watch it all happen.
Yeah.
No, just kidding. Hey. Let's close this thing out. We've been at it for fucking almost 2 hours. I appreciate your insight and your positivity to this game and to the enthusiasm of the industry. What the hell word did you say that was?
Panache.
Panache is...
Yeah. I'm just glad
if that's not the title of episode 123, Panache. Featuring John.
I'm just glad I got through another podcast without saying something horrible that can be held against me in the future.
Well, you do a good job of that. They're always listening to the next stupid shit that's probably coming out of my mouth that
when it gets to the guests, they know that they'll be a little bit, hey, get back. Hopefully that ding dong will fire something off to squash himself or make me laugh. But again, thank you very much, buddy. Stay pissed, everybody.
Love you, Mom and Dad.